broadcasting from the campus of Henry Ford College. This is WHFR Dearborn, listener-supported, non-commercial radio, featuring local and independent artists.
If you want to change the world, then you have to change yourself. One of the best places in the Metro Detroit area to improve your life is Henry Ford College. Henry Ford College offers dozens of degree and certificate programs, plus the opportunity to network with your peers and potential employers. Taking classes at Henry Ford College gives you the freedom to take your own career path and opens up an infinite number of career possibilities. Additionally, day and evening classes allow you the flexibility of building a schedule tailored to your busy lifestyle. So change the world, change yourself at Henry Ford College. For more information on admittance and financial aid and class schedules, call the Henry Ford College toll-free number at 1-800-585-HFCC. Again, that's 1-800-585-HFCC.
And you too can be dancing with Daddy G every Tuesday afternoon from 2 to 4 p.m. at the Malt Shop, right here on WHFR.fm. The jukebox will be spinning the platters from the 50s and the 60s. So hang those fuzzy dice on the rearview mirror, grab your favorite squeeze, and join me, Daddy G, at the Malt Shop on Tuesdays from 2 to 4 p.m. Be there. Or be square.
Broadcasting from the campus of Henry Ford College, this is WHFR Dearborn. Listener-supported, non-commercial radio, featuring local and independent artists.
And the following program has been pre-recorded. The views expressed by the participants are not necessarily those of WHFR Dearborn or Henry Ford College. Welcome to We Are Not Alone. We're local investigators as well as world-renowned scientists and ufologists share their latest evidence in support of the UFO reality. Hi, I'm David Twitchell. And you're listening to WHFR.FM, the station making waves. And for the next hour, we will be exploring the mysteries of the UFO and abduction phenomenon. And our guest today is Mr. Stephen Bassett. Mr. Bassett is the executive director of Paradigm Research Group, PGR, founded in 1996. To end the government-imposed embargo on the truth behind extraterrestrial-related phenomena. He has spoken to audiences around the world about the implications of formal disclosure by world governments of an extraterrestrial presence engaging the human race, and given over 1,000 radio and television interviews. PRG's advocacy work has been extensively covered by national and international media. In 2013, PRG produced the Citizens' Hearing on Disclosure at the National Press Club in Washington, D.C., which I have mentioned on this show many times. In November of 2014, POG launched two political initiatives in Washington, D.C. One sought the first hearings on Capitol Hill since 1968 regarding the extraterrestrial presence issue. The other sought to force the ET issue into the 2016 presidential campaign. Going forward from the U.S. election outcome, PRG will now also operate under the DBA PRG International. And Stephen will be seeking lectures, government contacts, and funding around the world. Stephen has appeared on many documentary films, and his lectures and interviews are extremely, extensively represented on YouTube. We've had him on the show before, and so I'm very happy to welcome Steve Bassett back to the show. Hello, Stephen.
Hi, David. It's good to be with you.
Good to have you back on the show. Explain the DBA PRG. What are we talking about here?
No, but earlier this year, I added a doing business as at the DBA.
Oh, I see.
PRG International. And the reason was is that I knew I was coming to Europe and going to be here for 6 months. Mm-hmm. And I'm exploring possibilities outside of the U.S. regarding disclosure.
Hmm. Are you in Europe right now?
I'm in London right now.
Aha. So I will have to remember this for you're on Skype, right?
Skype. On Skype, but I will be coming back to the U.S. on the 31st of January.
Okay, because there are many guests that I'd like to have on the show that are in London and Germany and what have you, but I can't get them because I can't call over there. Can't, you know, the college won't allow us to do that. But with Skype, I guess we can get around that, can't we?
If they just set up for Skype to phone, which is anyone on Skype can do that, then they can call any number in the world or practically nothing.
Okay. So the one problem I'm having with Skype here is I hear my voice bouncing back in my face, not yours. So I'm going to...
We're getting an echo.
Yeah.
And what I'd like to do, I can do it. It just takes a few seconds. Let me disconnect and call you right back, and we probably get a better connection.
Well, I don't know what you did, because I don't understand Skype, but I'm old school, but you did it, and I don't hear an echo. So here we go. So tell us about PRG.
Well, PRG was set up in 1996 with one purpose, and that was to end the U.S. government's policy that was formulated and initiated back in the very late 1940s, early 1950s, to withhold from the American people, and by extension, the world's people, the reality of an extraterrestrial presence, engaging the human race.
Okay.
We knew about this presence, the government did, not only of things it had been observing during the war, but of course, the sighting events of 1947 and, of course, the crash event at Roswell in 47. So no later than July of 47, the government was well aware that that we had an engagement underway by non-human intelligence.
Right.
And they chose to embargo that. And so the 96, I entered the field with the intent to help as best I could to end that embargo so that a formal acknowledgement from the president would take place.
So I've asked this question many times, and probably I've asked it of you. I'll ask it again. With all the officials coming forward on Disclosure Project and the hearings in Washington, the mock congressional hearings, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, the books coming out by so many credible authors, from so many credible officials, would a sitting president saying, yeah, it's real, would that make any difference?
Make all the difference in the world.
You think so?
The fact that there has been an embargo, the fact that the U.S. government has denied in writing that there's anything going on of any significance beyond acknowledging that, well, there may be something in the sky, we don't know what it is, an unknown flying object. That's as far as they go. We're not engaging this issue as a species. We're not engaging this issue at the level that it needs. There are no courses, no course of study in any of our 5,000 colleges and universities.
Mm-hmm.
The media is not engaging the issue or querying the government. We're right. not aware or informed about technology programs, black programs dealing with reengineering of ET technology, and on and on and on. In other words, we're held hostage to the national security edict of a truth embargo.
Mm-hmm.
And this is true for every other country in the world right now. So, in other words, we're not alone in the universe. We're already being gauged by more than one non-human intelligence, obviously from other, almost certainly from other planets.
Mm-hmm.
And we've known it for 70 years, and we're not engaging it as a civilization. So and in those 70 years, I should mention, there have been scores of wars. We have still got nuclear weapons. We've almost had nuclear war on a few occasions.
Mm-hmm.
And so you can see this is not acceptable to me and to a growing number of people. We need to move on with civilization and preventing the world's people from formally knowing they're not alone in the universe,
mm-hmm.
is an enormous impediment for us to move forward. So the formal acknowledgement by heads of state is absolutely essential if we're going to make progress.
Right, right. I understand. So, yeah, you used to have the countdown to disclosure clock on your site, and I don't see it anymore at your site. You still have it up, or are you taking that down?
No, the paradigm clock still exists.
Paradigm clock.
But I have sort of suspended it. I have not managed it for a while. I'm thinking about starting it again.
Mm-hmm.
It was designed as a way to attract attention to the concept of disclosure.
Mm-hmm.
Midnight on this paradigm clock was disclosure, the formal acknowledgement by heads of state. And I modeled it after the doomsday clock
mm-hmm.
that the Bulletin of Atomic Scientists created in 1947. Interesting enough.
Right.
And published it quite a bit, publicized it, but it's been in the back burner for a while. But I think I may rebirth it here shortly.
So if you were to put it back up again at your site, where would that clock be as opposed to midnight?
One of the reasons it went in suspension was that I kind of put it really close to midnight, thinking that we were very close a number of years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't know where to go after that. Things kind of took a turn.
Yeah.
However,
instead of backing it up, huh?
Yeah, well, I could have backed it up, and that's fine. But it just simply lost its. I guess the timing was off. But right now, the truth, and it's been a number of years have gone by.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, the truth embargo is very, very much closing in on its end. I would put the clock, no more than a minute from.
A minute till midnight.
Very close, yes.
And what makes you say that?
There are some extraordinary things underway. And it's a very complex story. I can give you the big picture.
We have time.
As best I can.
We have time.
And then I invite your listeners to research the various components.
Okay.
There are four... I guess you could say groups of players in this scenario that's playing out.
Mm-hmm.
One group is Robert Bigelow, the space billionaire or billionaire space entrepreneur,
mm-hmm.
Bigelow Aerospace out of Las Vegas, Nevada, and his people, his team, right? They have been developing flexible habitats.
Mm-hmm.
for use in space, which is a very, very useful and non-redundant, I think, research on his part. They recently just employed one at the space station for the first time. The second group is headed by a fellow by the name of Tom DeLonge, a man who made his fortune in music as a rock star and a leader of groups. I sold a lot of records, 30 million. The third group is individuals within the Pentagon and the CIA who are apparently desirous to see this process accelerate and reach its goal. In other words, they're a group that favors disclosure and has made decisions to assist it within certain parameters, without breaking laws and non-disclosure agreements and what have you. And the fourth group is probably the most complicated, and that is the key people within the Clinton political team, which goes back 25 years. This team includes, of course, the former secretary and candidate for President Hillary Clinton, her husband, Bill Clinton. Their longtime key advisor, John Podesta. Other key members of their previous administration and later administrations, Leon Panetta, Bill Richardson, I believe, and others. All of them were associated at one time with the Rockefeller Initiative, which took place from 93 to 96 during the Clinton administration as president. This is the four, what I call key groups, that are involved in a very complex historical development here. Okay. Now, I'm gonna give you a timeline that will, again, try to paint a context for this. You have the Rockefeller Initiative, 93 to 96, when Lawrence Rockefeller tried to persuade the Clinton administration to release all the files because the Cold War was over. And had that happened, then undoubtedly the truth embargo would have ended during the first term of Bill Clinton. But it didn't happen.
No.
Other things prevented it. And the Clintons went silent on that effort, never speaking of it. It ended in 96, so they went silent for 19 more years.
And yet there have been hints from the Clintons. Am I right?
Yes. When I say the Clintons went silent, they never spoke of the Rockefeller Initiative. However, over the years, after 2000, Bill Clinton spoke to it, spoke not to the Rockefeller Initiative, but to the ET issue. John Podesta spoke to it a number of times and was involved in some projects and efforts addressing the issue. Those two in particular are the ones that made some comments, but they never acknowledged publicly or spoke to the Rockefeller Initiative itself for, I think, political reasons, because they all had ambitions one way or another to either be president or officials in further administrations.
All right.
So that took place then. In 2013, Paradigm Research Group was able to hold a mock congressional hearing in Washington, D.C. at the National Press Club, brought together 42 witnesses to testify before former members of Congress in a mock congressional hearing. One of the two-hour segments of that hearing was about the Rockefeller Initiative. The hearing was broadcast on the Internet, thousands, and it was recorded. And in 2014, in November 2014, the full record of the citizen hearing was sent to all the members of Congress, including, of course, the 2 hours of testimony on the Rockefeller Initiative.
That's on YouTube as well, all those testimonies. Am I correct?
A lot of them are, not all, but there are pieces of it scattered all over YouTube. And you can still acquire, you can rent or acquire the entire 30 hours high definition at citizenhearing.org. Mm-hmm. So in November, the Congress receives this DVD set with the Rockefeller Initiative testimony. And at that time, Secretary Clinton had already pretty much declared she was running for president.
Mm-hmm.
So her campaign is really underway at the end of 2014. And at that point, I arrived back in Washington and set up shop and started another attempt. There had been many since year 2000 to convince the media, the political media, the high-end political media, that the connection between this candidate for president and her husband and others in their immediate political team to the ET issue was very significant and should be covered in the context of running for president.
Mm-hmm.
And we finally penetrated, I guess you could say, the wall there. And in December of 2014, articles began to appear in major papers like in Washington Post, Washington Times, and so forth, referring to the Clinton connection to the ET issue, statements they had made earlier over the years, as well as the Rockefeller Initiative itself. In fact, in January of 2015, the very first mention of the Rockefeller Initiative since it ended in 1996 occurred in a paper in Florida, Sarasota Herald Tribune, in an article by Billy Cox. So that was kind of a moment, a milestone of sorts.
Mm-hmm.
And so the Rockefeller Initiative and the connection to Clinton and the ET issue was in play. And leaping ahead, between December of 2014 and the election 2016, over 400 articles appeared in mainstream major media, including the Washington Post, Washington Times, New York Times, Chicago Tribune, and on and on and on, about the ET connection to Clinton.
Mm-hmm.
As a result of this breakthrough, reporters began to approach the Clinton people, herself, her campaign, and John Podesta, wanting clarification
mm-hmm.
about this connection.
Mm-hmm.
But they did not want, they did not, they were, in other words, this was not something they wanted. They did not want this out during the campaign. They didn't want to be bothered.
All right.
They wanted to just win the presidency.
All right.
Without having to address the issue.
Talk about that from the White House, right?
That's right.
Yeah. I hate to interrupt you, but I need to take a break right now to remind our listeners that you're listening to WHFR.FM, the station making waves. That's 89.3 FM on your radio dial and WHFR.FM on your computer. And you're listening to We Are Not Alone. I'm David Twitchell, and we're speaking with Mr. Stephen Bassett of the Paradigm Research Group. He's also a UFO researcher and advocate. So I'm sorry to interrupt, but please go ahead.
By the way, I'm not a researcher. I'm a political activist.
Okay, but you got
to
do
research to others.
I was going to say you got to do some research, don't you?
But I let others do the research, and I just use it.
Okay.
What happened was is that the Clintons and their people would not answer these reporters. They would not respond. They would not even give them a no comment. They simply stonewalled them.
Hmm.
And it was this pressure, and I was working directly with eventually 42 reporters in a fairly close source relationship. It was this pressure that ultimately forced John Podesta and Hillary Clinton and Bill Clinton to arrange to speak to the issue on talk shows like Jimmy Kimmel and other venues during the campaign, even though we didn't want to. And of course, every time they spoke to the issue, it generated even more articles.
Sure.
So as we're moving forward, there is a kind of chess game underway. The Clintons knew that they could not simply say nothing with the reporters beating on their door, at least trying to pressure them.
Mm-hmm.
But they couldn't say too much, because if they did, it might ignite the issue and explode it into the media interface, political media interface,
mm-hmm.
and result in disclosure perhaps happening during the campaign, but under Barack Obama.
Mm-hmm.
And so they were playing it down the middle, I guess you could say. And the only reason it did not explode during the campaign to become a major issue and a major story is that all of the debate moderators who are television news hosts chose to ignore the entire story, ignore all of the media, all of the press on it, and never ask her or any other candidates
mm-hmm.
about the Clinton ET connection. They simply never ask about it.
All right, all right.
And this essentially saved them from, or made it possible for them to continue to walk that middle course.
Mm-hmm.
And by June the 2nd, they felt they had made it home free, and they would simply wait until they got to the White House,
mm-hmm.
at which time I'm pretty sure that Secretary Clinton or the new President Clinton
mm-hmm.
was going to engage the issue, and undoubtedly we would have seen disclosure early in her administration.
Mm-hmm.
She would have been the disclosure president and the first woman president and had a rather profound historical legacy.
I guess.
But she didn't win.
No.
And that threw everything up in the air. And so that's another piece of this complex picture. Now, here's the third piece. All right?
Mm-hmm.
Sometime in 2015, when Hillary Clinton was the absolute leading candidate to be president, she was ahead in all of the polls. The Republicans had a menagerie of 24, 5, 6 candidates all vying to be the presidential candidate.
All right.
I think the Democrats had 3, mm-hmm. Eventually just 2, then 1. At that time, with the media coverage relentlessly addressing the connection between the candidate, Secretary Clinton, and the ET issue, and her being the leading candidate, something happened within the Pentagon and the CIA, the specifics of which we do not know. But my best assessment is that a group or groups working in the CIA, working in the Pentagon, who were of the mind that disclosure and the acknowledgement of this issue should happen, and anticipating that the Clinton candidacy and the media coverage was ultimately leading to disclosure when she was elected, they made a decision that it was in the best interest of the Pentagon and the CIA to get out in front of the issue. And by that, I mean, rather than simply sit tight and continue to deny everything or take no actions and then wait for it all to sort of break out, that they needed to get out in front of the issue to improve the, how would you say, public relations prospects for the military intelligence complex when this issue finally comes to a head.
Mm-hmm.
And also because I think they honestly wanted to help. But they had limitations. They weren't going to break laws. They weren't going to break non-disclosure agreements. They are not they work for the executive branch. They work for the president. So they couldn't just do anything. But they sought to find a way to put themselves in play and show a cooperative demeanor. I'm not saying that everyone in the Pentagon and the CIA of that mind. I imagine there were plenty who had no interest in doing that. But for whatever reason, this group had the ability to take some action.
Mm-hmm.
And the action they chose to take was quite interesting. What they did is reach out to a rather unlikely, maybe not so unlikely, private citizen by the name of Tom DeLonge, the founder and the head of two successful groups, Blink 182 and Angels and Airways and other, and sold 30 million. So he had plenty of money, but it was known to them and to a lot of other people that his interest in the subject was really lifelong, and that he had been very much involved in the 90s, the first half of the 90s, with the issue. He was helping the Disclosure Project and Stephen Greer. He was probably providing funding and so forth. Mm-hmm. But then he stepped back and had not been overtly involved for a number of years. And so they reached out to him and arranged to meet, I think maybe invited to some events, some parties, whatever, where they could chat him up. Now, again, I'm providing an assessment here. I don't know the specifics of this engagement. He's talked about it, but not in depth. But I'm giving an assessment.
All right.
And what came of this? And again, this is all happening in 2015, when the Pentagon is fairly convinced Hillary Clinton is going to be the next president, and her connection to the issue is being spread all over the media.
Mm-hmm.
They worked out an arrangement in which he would be a conduit for information on this issue to be brought to the public in a form that would be very appealing to particularly the younger generation, the millennials, perhaps even Gen Xers. In other words, he spoke their language.
All right.
And deals were struck and arrangements were made. And this went on for, behind the scenes for months and months. And it did not surface in a formal way until, I think, March of 2016.
Mm-hmm.
Again, Hillary Clinton is still the leading candidate to be president. She's ahead in all the polls. More and more articles have continued to come out about her connection, including a May 10th article in the New York Times, which referred to this connection and the Rockefeller Initiative with links to video and other things, mm-hmm. and a substantial amount of mention of PRG and its political initiative engaging the candidate on this issue. That was May 10th. Mm-hmm. And so Tom DeLonge gave an interview to George Knapp while he was filling in on Coast to Coast AM. And he announced what was going on. He made it clear that he had been talking to insiders in the Pentagon at a very high level, that they had provided a 10-person advisory team to convey to him information, and that he would be bringing this information out in the form of books, really fiction books, what we call nonfiction fiction, documentary, and other modalities, and presenting that as a way of informing the public of a lot of what's happening and some of the things that they can expect, but again, not really violating what I would call any legal strictures that the Pentagon might be under. Mm-hmm. And this caught a lot of people by surprise. They did not expect this, and a lot of people simply didn't believe it, including me.
Mm-hmm.
I don't get it. Why Tom DeLonge and so forth? And so there was a lot of attention paid to this interview, which you can find on the internet, George Knapp, Tom DeLonge interview. So I naturally was watching very carefully to see what would happen next.
Mm-hmm.
Well, not long after that, Tom announced the first book was being published. It's called Secret Machine. And it was talking about various things, which if you read it as nonfiction, it would appear to be reflecting some things the government has learned and found out over these last 70 years with respect to the ET issue.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was very notable. It was co-authored by Peter Lavenda. And then they talked about a documentary, and I'm starting to now believe that, wow, the top people in the CIA are talking to DeLong. This is real, and this is very interesting. And, of course, it's 2016. The media is covering Clinton extensively. The ET issue, a connection to her, is in the media. I'm talking to reporters behind the scenes. This is happening. And so I'm even more convinced than ever that disclosure is going to break out at some point, either under Obama or under Clinton once she's elected. Mm-hmm. Then things took another turn, an interesting turn. As we approached the election, things got extremely strange. There was first a leak of thousands of emails from the Democratic National Committee, which were more embarrassing than damaging, but they were embarrassing. But Clinton was still the leading candidate. And then there was the Podesta email link, 50,000, put out by WikiLeaks, source to WikiLeaks, still not known yet, but claimed to be Russian. And these emails were leaked in a very specific way, about 5,000 a day over a period of about 11 or 12 days. Mm-hmm. This was clearly a kind of revenge on the part of Julian Assange toward Clinton, because he didn't like her, and because he didn't see that she was serving either the cause of transparency in government or peace. And so this deliberate pacing of released emails served to magnify anything in those emails that could cause a problem for her candidacy. Mm-hmm. Well, I knew there were plenty of emails in there regarding the ET issue, and so they were going to come out, which excited me. I said, that's good. As it was, there was about 100 emails, including a couple from me to John Podesta. But what was very interesting was there were 50-some references in those emails to Tom DeLong. And the emails confirmed that DeLong was in touch with the Clinton campaign, that he had been introducing high-level people that he'd been working with to Podesta, that they had done an interview for the documentary. And this confirmed, now once and for all, that the Tom DeLong initiative, engaged by the Pentagon, was real and very important.
Mm-hmm.
These
proved that the Pentagon was involved in knowledge in the UFO phenomenon. Am I right?
It confirmed that people within the Pentagon were in fact taking overt action to bring information to the public for the reasons that I have speculated, namely that they're trying to get out in front of the issue,
right. Given
that Clinton is going to become the president, and she's been speaking to the issue in her limited way throughout the campaign.
Mm.
But then things then took another turn. And that turn was the actions by the FBI about reopening the early investigation of Clinton and then closing it. And then another event there. And and all of that combined with many other things resulted in her not winning this election.
All right.
And that blew everything sky high. which was a blow, and was one of the reasons that I had to change course. Mm. And so Clinton is out, Trump is in, and the DeLong initiative essentially goes on hold. It stops. A lot of things stopped after that election.
Right.
And we hear very little from him for months.
From DeLong.
Mm. And then he begins to indicate that things are moving forward again, anticipated development. But then months would go by, nothing would happen. People were getting kind of frustrated and questioning whether DeLong had the goods.
Huh.
Then, and now we're approaching the last part of this complex scenario. Several developments occur in rapid succession. All important.
Okay.
The first one was that Robert Bigelow, the aerospace entrepreneur, on the occasion of the first test of his flexible habitat, space habitat, being attached and inflated at the International Space Station, gave a full interview to CBS's 60 Minutes.
Right.
Fully appropriate, given the circumstances. He knew they were going to ask him about his ET UFO interests, which were extensive. He formed a group called the National Institute of Discovery Sciences back in 95, before he even started Bigelow Aerospace. Mm-hmm. He ran that for 8 years. They were investigating a range of things, including, of course, ET phenomena, UFO sightings, and what have you. He engaged MUFON in the period around 96 and so forth. And so he knew he was going to be asked. He didn't know exactly what the question would be, nor did 60 Minutes know what the answer would be. And then Bigelow shocked the world when the woman journalist finally asked him about the UFO question or his interest. And he stated that, in so many words, that there was, in fact, an ET presence engaging the planet. She didn't see that coming, you could tell. And her response was immediate. Are you concerned, I'm paraphrasing, that people might think you're a little crazy? And his response was instantaneous. I don't give a damn.
Mm-hmm.
She then pressed him, and he restated, in other words, that there is an ET presence. Now, this was a bomb going off, mm-hmm. and a lot of coverage came from that. Though it didn't spill out, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, it's kind of similar to when Edgar Mitchell made his statement on Kerrang Radio in England about.
That was a lot of years ago, though.
Yeah,
and it was in England. It wasn't 60 Minutes. Kerrang Radio.
No,
60 Minutes.
No,
this is far more powerful. And by the way, this again is happening in 2017.
Right.
All right. This was back around July, August 2017, right. last year. All right. So that was very remarkable.
Okay.
And then the next thing that happened was on October 11th, Tom DeLonge finally comes forward with what he had been alluding to for months and announces a major project called To the Stars Academy.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we call it. The whole name is To the Stars Academy of Arts and Science. He had put a team together. They were going to look into all of the issues surrounding the ET matter, including technology and so forth and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
They had formed a public service company, which allowed them, with a minimum amount of SEC oversight, to raise funds at $5 a share.
Mm-hmm.
And they announced his team of people. And this is where things start to get really significant. Because this team included a former Deputy Assistant Secretary of Defense for Intelligence, a former senior intelligence officer, a former Advanced Systems Director for Lockheed Martin Skunk Works, a former director of programs to investigate unidentified aerial threats, a group of physicists, a geneticist, molecular biologist. And two of these people had just retired days before from their positions with the DOD and CIA to immediately join his team.
Mm-hmm.
And what I was able to ascertain, based upon statements by DeLonge, was that when Trump wins the election, the Pentagon's initial program, I guess you could say, had to change. And the individuals inside had to step back inside. They could not risk further public connection, because there was a little bit of that came out in the Podesta emails that made them uncomfortable. They didn't expect that, and they didn't want that to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And so the reason it took him 8 months to reconfigure is he had to put together a somewhat new team And he had to get people that weren't obviously, they could come forward, but weren't working in government. And so apparently it was arranged, though cover stories, I think, were put forward, that certain key people, the most important being Luis Elizondo, would resign and then join his team. Now, understand, when you resign from a 22 or 30-year career with the CIA or the DOD, there is a long list of very lucrative options available to you. Mm-hmm. And so they forgoed those and joined up with this new team, the To the Stars Academy.
Right.
And that announcement was on October the 11th.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, that was, and by the way, within a month, they raised nearly $2 million from investors in this public service company.
Mm-hmm.
And then the next development was extremely significant. Tom had been alluding to this. And on December the 16th, almost certainly based upon information presented to the New York Times. And it was the New York Times, they didn't have to go out and dig for this. They basically came to them and handed them a story. The New York Times published a groundbreaking article, two articles rather, on December the 16th. The first article revealed more about this overall strategy and program. And it was very significant. What we learned in that article was that, now remember Robert Bigelow,
right,
what he said on 60 Minutes.
Mm-hmm.
What we learned is in 2007, Nevada Senator and former Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid, with the assistance of Senator Stevens of Alaska and Senator Daniel Inouye of Hawaii, earmarked quietly up to $22 million to fund, quote, a new investigative program within the DOD to look into the ET issue.
Mm-hmm.
Now, again, when I say new, this was essentially Harry Reid, a senator. He wanted this. The Pentagon agreed. Does that mean the Pentagon wasn't already investigating the ET issue? The Pentagon has never stopped investigating the ET
issue. I was going to say that. They were supposed to have stopped investigating back in 69 when Operation Whitewash, or I'm sorry, Blue Book.
Right. And that, of course, is malarkey.
That's what
but
I'm
this
saying.
This would have been another program that Harry Reid was behind.
Mm-hmm.
Luis Elizondo was put in charge.
Mm-hmm.
And the money, and it was Robert Bigelow's facilities
mm-hmm.
that were used to support, significantly support this research investigation effort.
Mm-hmm.
And it was announced that, one, the program ran from 2007 to 2012, 5 years,
mm-hmm.
that the money ran out at that time, but the program continued, but with far less funding, and Luis Elizondo continued to run it from within the Pentagon.
So it's still running.
We also learned
You think it's still running?
Oh yeah.
Okay.
We also learned. Well, maybe it's in suspension at the moment, given all the publicity. We'll see. But we also learned that that Bigelow set up facilities at the Bigelow Aerospace complex to study materiel.
Okay.
And I don't think we're talking arts parts here.
Mm-hmm.
I'm assuming this material came from within government itself. And this was a major story, and it generated a lot of press. I have on my website, paradigmresearchgroup.org, under the media archive, I'm linking to all of these articles, up to about 160.
Mm-hmm.
But the other thing that was released on November the 16th may have been even more important. What was covered and then shown on the New York Times website was gun camera footage claimed to come from the Nimitz aircraft carrier task force event of 2004,
mm-hmm.
in which unidentified objects were tracked by the Nimitz for days and eventually intercepts were made with by F-18s. And as always, gun camera footage of the radar and the infrared cameras was taken and archived. Now, in all of the years since the ET issue explodes in early 47, no gun camera footage has ever been released by any government from their defense aircraft.
It has been leaked. There has been gun camera footage leaked, but never released. Am I correct?
I am not even aware of it being leaked. I've never seen it.
I'll send you.
Was an event over Nellis Air Force Base, but that was not a plain gun camera. That was a ground-based camera.
Okay.
And the fact is, if any of the governments were to start releasing their gun camera footage, well, hell, the truth embargo would have been over years ago.
I hear you.
So that had to remain archived.
Mm-hmm.
However, this piece was there, and it was made clear that Elizondo took it with him when he left the Pentagon. He took three films when he left the Pentagon. Now, the Pentagon has already denied that that was a release by them.
Oh, really?
I don't believe that for a second, but they've been asked several times, because if, in fact, it was not released by them, then Elizondo would have broken some serious laws, and they would be taking action, and they're taking no action whatsoever.
Mm-mm.
And so basically, the Pentagon is denying a connection because they're trying to keep things under, how would you say, control, trying to avoid a critical mass taking place. Mm-hmm. In any event, that footage was very profound, very compelling, and the pilot of the plane was interviewed for the article and, of course, has given many interviews since. This turned up the heat on the entire ET issue as well as the truth embargo dramatically. And that was just about a little under a month ago. Tom DeLonge has made it clear that more is coming, including two more gun camera footages, and Lord knows what else. So the upshot of this, David, is that this larger picture, if it continues to unfold in the way we've seen, involving Bigelow, involving Tom DeLonge and this amazing team of people he has together, involving the Pentagon's intentions, and, of course, sitting behind all of that are the living members of the Rockefeller Initiative, including President Clinton and Secretary Clinton, who could speak publicly at any time, which they have yet to do, and their connection to this. And there is one other piece to this which needs to be noted.
Okay.
And that is, one of the biggest concerns the Pentagon had, besides the fact that Clinton seemed to be heading towards disclosure, is that they are well aware that another head of state, like a Vladimir Putin, could disclose any time, in which case they're holding the bag, aren't they?
Yeah.
And so they have to factor that in. And over the years, PRG has spoken hundreds of times about Putin and his potential to be the disclosure president. And in May of this year, the last year, about a couple of months before Bigelow makes his statement, I went to Moscow and gave an interview to a national Russian network, television network. And in that interview, it lasted about an hour and a half, I covered and talked about the politics both in the Soviet, in Russia and in the United States, and about Putin, the pros and cons of Putin being a disclosure president. Now, while I had talked about that in U.S. media, no one had ever talked about that on Russian media anywhere, let alone on Russian soil. I'm quite sure the CIA knew I was there. I also met with six groups of Russians who were involved in this subject matter. Members of these groups, most of the groups had members that were had worked inside the Soviet government and the Russian government on this subject, and then since continued their interest after leaving government. This ensured that Putin would have known I was there, and then I came back to London. Eventually, a few minutes of that interview were used in a Russian television show, but not the politics. But then I got the English language interview, in other words, the actual initial interview in English, and started a few weeks ago, about a month ago, releasing excerpts from that. And in about another 10 days, I'm going to release the key center part in which I discuss Vladimir Putin.
Okay.
Now, I do not know if my actions in Europe and in Moscow affected any decision-making in Washington. But there is no question in my mind that one of the factors that has prompted this extraordinary, daring maneuver on the part of certain members of the Pentagon, groups in the Pentagon and CIA, to engage this issue publicly in a way that does, that doesn't really violate their relationship to the White House or any laws, is partially prompted by the fact that Xi Jinping or Putin could at any time disclose the ET presence to their people and to the world. And our government would be sitting there flat-footed with egg on its face, having to say, well, I guess we have to tell you now. And so that is why all of this that I've just described is why I have to put the paradigm clock at 1 minute to midnight.
Right.
If things continue at this pace, we will very likely see disclosure this year.
And here's a question for you, Steve.
Mm-hmm.
If President Trump were to announce tomorrow that ET has been visiting us for many years and UFO phenomenon is a real phenomenon, do you think he would be believed by the American people and or the world?
He will be. He will be the disclosure president. He will get that legacy. He'll be believed because he's not going to be able to do it unless the Pentagon has already agreed to back him up.
Okay.
And so it won't just be his word. The Pentagon will provide information, evidence unknown to the public and what have you, that would make it clear. Not to mention the fact that probably within a very short amount of time, other heads of state, either because they knew or because they were immediately briefed by their military intelligence complex, would confirm it. And so that would be that. And
so,
disclosure would take place.
So he couldn't just come out and surprise, surprise, surprise everybody, including the Pentagon, and make a statement like that. He would have to, this would have to be backed up
he
by the
Pentagon. He could. I mean, he could just blurt, put it out in a tweet.
Right.
But
I guess that's what I'm saying. If he did that in a tweet.
It would be like, you know, if there were Twitter back in the days of Franklin Roosevelt, him putting out a tweet that we've just gone to war with Japan. No, Kelly would almost certainly prevent that if he could. This is not trivial stuff, but if he did, it would create a real foo-fah. There'd be a lot of confusion and chaos.
Now, that's what I'm thinking.
Probably it would end up with disclosure, but it would be very ugly, very chaotic, very embarrassing way to go about it.
All right.
But you can't rule it out because the man is unpredictable.
All right.
And that's about all I can say on that.
That's about all we should say on that. But at the same time, I'm just wondering what your thoughts would be on that, if he would be believed or not. But as long as he had the backing of the Pentagon, and I don't think the Pentagon's ready. I mean, there's a lot of apologies to that are connected with disclosure right now, going back to Roswell, at least to Roswell, you know? Apologies for that.
It's always been the case, Dan.
Yeah, I understand.
It's always going to be those apologies. The point is, the process is what it is, and we're heading toward disclosure at a fairly rapid pace. So if I'm the Pentagon, if I'm those in the Pentagon who do not want disclosure, I would still be preparing my apologies now.
Right.
I wouldn't wait.
We're running low on time, Steve, but where can our listeners go to find out more about PRG and more about your work?
ParadigmResearchGroup.org. You go in past the / page, You'll find links to the political initiative I was talking about,
mm-hmm.
the Rockefeller initiative I was talking about, a media archive where links to hundreds of articles about the DeLong initiative. Now, that site, however, is about to be relaunched in about another 2 weeks, completely reconfigured site, much more modern, much more easy to use, but the other one will remain up until then.
Mm-hmm.
The domain will not change. So paradigmresearchgroup.org, if you want to support PRG, there's funding links in the lower left and lower right corner of that front page.
Okay. Steve, I appreciate you joining us today, and hope we can do this again soon.
Okay, I hope, David, that picture I painted was relatively clear for you.
It was very extensive, and I appreciate it.
My pleasure, sir.
Okay. Thank you again. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And if our listeners have any questions or comments for me, you can email me at dtwitchell@hotmail.com. This show, as well as all the forum shows, is now archived at whfr.fm's website. Click on Talk Shows on the homepage and then Tuesday Forum. We Are Not Alone is also archived at my website, which is ufoimplications.com. That's ufoimplications.com. Please stay tuned to WHFR.FM, the station making waves, for the best in alternative programming. And I want to thank you for joining us today. Please join us again the first Tuesday of each month at 1 p.m., when we will again explore the mysteries of the UFO phenomenon. So until then, this is David Twitchell reminding you to keep an eye on the sky.
Broadcasting from the campus of Henry Ford College, this is WHFR Dearborn. Listener-supported, non-commercial radio.
And dolls, you are at the Mouth Shop with Daddy G, and we are going back to the 50s and 60s. So hang those fuzzy dice on the rearview mirror, grab your favorite squeeze, and head on down to the Mouth Shop, where the jukebox is playing, the kids are dancing, and here we are, back in the 50s.